Regularly scheduled programs will not be seen tonight so that we may bring you the NFL football game live and in color.
From the men who brought you basically a sports show, if your football fix wasn't met on Thursday night, it's time for an additional slice. This is basically a football show right now. Let's go!
Get in here! I got one thing to say. This is when the big dogs come out.
Stay on the ball.
Can't run with the big dogs. Stay on the ball.
Hey, baby! We're going to be here all day, baby! I like this kind of party! I like this kind of party, baby!
His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, football fans, we're back. It's episode 3 of season 2 of Basically a Football Show. Week 1 of NFL football in the books. Week 2 of college in the books. But we got to start not a happy place. And of course, joining me as always is Greg. And for a special appearance this week, basically a sports show co-host, basically a geek show co-host, Mike.
Yo!
The football side of those things.
Thank you. Thank you, yeah.
As good as the first weekend in the NFL was, nobody was talking about the on-field stuff come Monday morning. As the second Ray Rice video came out, and you see Ray Rice punch his girlfriend right in the face, knock her into the railing, out cold, kick her while she's down, try to drag her out of an elevator.
Step over her like she was just another player on a football field.
I just want to say something on that regard. When this whole thing, when the whole Ray Rice thing first flared up, I was talked down to by people who said that how dare I condemn Ray Rice because we don't know the full story and maybe she just got drunk and fell down. Well,
the thing with that argument too is, when the video came out, I mean, what were you expecting to see?
Exactly.
What are you supposed to think about what's in there?
I think that Dan Patrick put it best when I was listening to his show today. He said there is not a polite way to knock someone out.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know what
people
expected.
The only legitimate way that Ray Rice could have been absolved is if the inside video showed her tripping and falling, you know, and passing out.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was, you see the video of her walking in, and she kind of slaps him on the face, like when they're outside. But she's not belligerently like fall down, pass out drunk at that point.
No, and let's be honest too. This is an NFL running back. That girl smacking at him the way she was in that elevator—that is so completely harmless to a guy of his size. It was uncomfortable to watch. But like you guys brought up, what did we expect? What did we think happened in there? You can't accidentally knock someone out. Mm-hmm. You can't do it in a way that's not going to, that the rest of us aren't going to find just awful. And it was just an awful video. This is something I wanted to bring up real quick on this, okay?
Sure.
One of the big arguments before this video came out was he deserves a second chance. He deserves a second chance. And this made me think of this analogy. If we all met at a bar somewhere and you guys walked in and you saw me smoking a cigarette, would you assume that's the first time I'd ever lit a cigarette in my life? No.
No.
I just don't think that this is something that Ray Rice just that day, that moment, thought, you know what? I'm going to just deck her. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not saying that he did or he didn't or this wasn't his first time, but it's been my experience that people that do this sort of thing, it's not something that they just decide to do one day when they're 28 years old. I think there's been a history of it. This is just the first time we've ever seen it. So I'm not for giving him a second chance at all. I wasn't before. I think I said it on basically a sports show last week. If it were my way, he would have been suspended for life the minute they saw the first video, let alone this one. But here we are.
I think the thing that's interesting, too, is at this point the story's evolved. It's not so much that Ray Rice is a terrible person. The story now is how terribly the NFL has handled this. We've always talked about it where you wonder when the NFL will reach a breaking point. It's usually like, oh, well, somebody has to die on the field. I think this situation in particular is something to think about.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't know if this is the tipping point. I don't know if this will start the ride down the other side of the hill for the NFL. But we're seeing little chips in the armor here and there. And this is a pretty big – this is more than just a chip. This is kind of a crack with this because they botched this from the beginning. They're saying – Roger Goodell's saying they had not seen the Ray Rice video. My first question is why not? And that brings up the question, was it because – they couldn't get access to it or because they didn't want to see it?
They had access to it. There's no way they didn't. I can't see a situation where they didn't have access to this video.
And that's one of the problems right now. All these reporters beforehand said that the NFL had had access to the video, that somebody in the NFL office had seen the video, this, that, and the other thing. But now everyone in the NFL is saying, well, no, we didn't see it. The authorities wouldn't let us see it.
And what's interesting
– and some people are saying that, well, the casino made a copy for the NFL. They just never went and picked it up. So Goodell finally spoke with CBS News today, and he was quoted as saying that he assumed – there was video from inside the elevator, and the league asked for the video but was, quote, not granted the opportunity. When asked how TMZ could acquire the footage but the NFL couldn't, Goodell said he relies on law enforcement for information since they're the most credible. He was then asked why the league acted forcefully only after the elevator surface footage, when the first video showed Rice dragging his unconscious then-fiancé, now wife, out of the elevator. And this is my question, too, because whether they wanted to go get the video or not, this is my question for them. Did you really need to see a videotape of Ray Rice punching her in the face to make the decision? And Goodell then said no, saying that the second video was extremely graphic and sickening.
So he did not address why he went so leniently on him in the first place.
Well, no. And then, of course, he made the two-game suspension, and everyone came down on him. And then he goes and says, yeah, we messed up. He publicly makes a statement that said, we messed up on this. And here's the devil's advocate position. If I were to be Ray Rice's attorney, and I'm sure he'll try to fight this in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So you give the two games to him, and then you say you messed up. So then you update your domestic violence policies to say the first time offender is 6 games. And there was somebody, Ray McDonald of the 49ers, was convicted, I think, like 2 days after the new rules came down.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he hasn't been officially suspended yet. He played for the 49ers this Sunday. And then, so you put the 6-game rule in place. So then when the second video comes out, instead of sticking with the rules you just created, you go over the rules and give him an indefinite suspension instead of the 6. Now, obviously, I'm not going to try and defend Ray Rice, but if I were trying to, or if I was his attorney, this just speaks more and more to the NFL having no idea what's
going on. The NFL ran scared. There are two possibilities in my mind. Either the NFL saw the video or they didn't, but it's because they were actively afraid of watching it. Like, they didn't want to see it. Those are the only two real possibilities in my mind, and I think they didn't think it would get out. And so this whole thing, since the initial 2 games came down, the NFL has been panicking. 2 games came down. People jumped all over them for it. They panicked. They came out with this 6-game, this 2-strike rule, 2 games and then life. And then as soon as this video comes out, they go into panic mode again. It just doesn't – they just seem to be completely disconnected.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. Going with what Roger Goodell has done up to this point, and he essentially in this position, he is the spokesman for the league. He's the face of the league in this matter. And going from a 2-game suspension and then seeing the video and all of a sudden, well, that's it. It goes right back to what we talked about originally when we started tonight. What did he expect to see in that video? It's like he couldn't connect point A and point B. Mm-hmm. And he had to see the video evidence to prove that, yes, he did knock her out. Now, my understanding of it and is that when Ray Rice and his wife met with Goodell and with the NFL offices, that Rice claimed it was an accident, that he accidentally knocked her out. That didn't look like any accident to me in that elevator.
No.
And yeah. I'm just thinking, if that was an accident, imagine what he had done if he had tried to knock her out.
The other thing that's interesting to note here is his wife's side of this, because at the time she was just his fiance, but she decided to still go through with it after getting knocked out.
Yeah.
You know, and him getting convicted for domestic violence. And then she released a statement today to the effect of it's a shame to see what this league is doing to my husband just for their ratings. So she's still defending him. So it's weird. Like, I know this can be a case with domestic violence where whoever the battered spouse is, male or female, they stay with their abuser because of Stockholm syndrome or something of that nature. But
I don't know.
It boggles the mind. But let me I can give you a really good example. Women do this stuff all the time. And on New Year's Eve of 1985, I was out drinking with my friends. We went to this bar that we always hung out at. There was a guy smacking his girlfriend around out in the parking lot, right? Well, me being drunk and thinking I was a superhero, I got out and I went into it. I stepped in and I got into it with the guy, and wouldn't you know that the girl who had just not a minute before been being beaten by this guy jumped on my back and started beating on me. I don't understand it, but women do it all the time. I know a lot of people want to say, oh, it's because he makes all this money, she doesn't want to cut him loose. That's nonsense. That's not the reason for this. But it does boggle the mind why she would stay. Maybe it was his first time. Maybe she knew it was a one-time thing. Maybe they were both drunk. I don't know, but...
Well, I think they were both drunk. I think that's clear.
Well, I would love to give him the benefit of the doubt, but like I said, I just can't imagine that this was something that just occurred to him that night in that elevator. I don't know. But the NFL, to get back to the real, I guess, well, there's a lot of real issues here, but the NFL couldn't have screwed this up. It seems like they've been playing catch-up the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, instead of doing what was right out of the gate, and this is what's so kind of baffling about it with Roger Goodell, he's gotten this reputation of being the harsh disciplinarian. So what happened here?
Yeah, that's...
Why did they botch this so badly?
That's confusing, because he has, in the past, has not been afraid to lay down lengthy suspensions.
Yeah, when he came in, he went right after Pac-Man Jones. For less proof than what we have here with Ray Rice, he went pretty hard against Ben Roethlisberger.
I mean, was Roethlisberger even charged in that? I don't
remember. No, he wasn't.
No, so, yeah.
And he got, what, six games?
Something like, I don't remember what it was exactly.
Yeah, it was six games. It was originally something like eight, and then it got knocked down to six.
Right, it was six games for something he didn't actually even get charged for.
Right, just on the idea that he might have done it. He got an eight-game suspension. Right, Ray Rice, I mean, you've got a picture of him dragging an unconscious woman out of an elevator, and he gets two games.
That's why this doesn't... This whole situation is just odd from every angle, because none of it makes sense.
Could it be because, again, I'm not defending anyone, I'm just throwing this into the conversation. Could it be that the suspension was not as harsh as it should have been because Ray Rice went and his wife sat down with them and explained the situation, and he did the, I think it's called a diversion program or whatever, and all that?
Right.
Is that what this is all about? Because
I think this is probably another situation, because Ray Rice didn't actually get convicted. He hasn't been officially charged as guilty for this.
Right.
He got arrested, but then the judge said, well, you enter this program, and you complete it, then the charges are dropped. So technically, he's not convicted. And I'm sure that's what Roger Goodell was saying. I think he said something about, you got to let the legal process play out. And it just...
But again, that's bullshit, because he's never been one to,
right,
you know,
right,
say
right.
that. He's
right.
been heavy-handed before.
And let's be honest, too. It's not like that Roger Goodell was going to put Ray Rice in prison. Yes, the legal process has to play out in that respect. Sure, it does. But I don't think any of us, if a video surfaced tomorrow of us beating a woman in an elevator, none of us have a job by tomorrow afternoon.
No.
Screw the legal process. It doesn't even matter. We're done. Simple as that. So, no, the legal process really doesn't have to play out. It just
right.
it doesn't. You can do what you want as the employer of this particular person. You don't have to wait for any legal process, so spare me that nonsense too. But that's always the NFL's position. I mean, God, we must sound like a broken record at this point, talking about all the players, that all the things that have happened over all the years, and it's always, we've got to let the legal process play out. We've got to let this and that happen and the other thing. No, you don't.
The NFL, these past few years, it's become undeniable that this league's priority system is so out of whack.
What do you guys think? A lot of people are calling for Goodell's resignation. What do you guys think about that?
I've been one of Goodell's supporters for a long time. I thought his heavy-handed approach when he came into the league was exactly what the NFL needed. I've defended his stance on player safety and all that before, but if it turns out, and I think this will come to light as the truth eventually, but if it turns out that he either had seen that the second video or willfully ignored it, then he has to.
I think he probably should. Because the NFL's so concerned about its image. And just for the NFL's image, if he really cared about the league as a whole, as its commissioner, he would resign. The other thing to think about is, I mean, because he can only resign. The only way that he could be fired is all 30 owners have to go against him.
Right.
And I don't think they're going to do that.
No.
So it's a tough spot. Well, it really is, because it's just they've handled this so terribly. I mean, even some of the people from the Ravens should probably step down because of how they – because they could have instituted their own lengthier suspension, a team suspension. But they never did.
No. And
they stayed behind him every step of the way.
Here's another question I've been pondering since this whole thing broke. If you're a woman, how do you feel about this? Can you separate this from the game that you're watching? Because there's a lot of women fans out there.
Well, just wait, you know, what is it, 3 weeks, two, three
that's,
weeks?
I mean, and that's going to come across
as showing up?
It's when such a joke.
When the NFL starts promoting breast, that's going to be funny in a very sad way.
If the NFL was really smart about this weekend, starting this weekend, in games this weekend, they would be showing domestic violence PSAs.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens when we get to Sunday.
I'm shocked that Mike Ditka didn't come to Ray Rice's defense.
Back in our day, we hit our wives all the time with no big deal.
Back when I was the coach, we could hit anybody we wanted to. Wasn't any of this PC nonsense. We're already starting to see that pendulum starting to swing back just a little bit the other way on the NFL here. And things are not as rosy as they were even 2 years ago. I mean,
you look just at the last calendar year.
Yeah.
You have Aaron Hernandez. You have this. You have all the suspensions in the off season. You have the Redskins thing.
You can only chip away at a wall so long before it's going to start to crumble. And like I said, we've had a lot of little chips here and there. I think this is the first crack we've seen because, man, I don't know anyone out there except for the most just absolutely blind fan that thinks they've done this the right way. I can't imagine anyone.
Plus, this is a story that has reached the normal person. Even if you're not an NFL fan, this is being talked about on general news.
Right.
And all your debate programs and on talk radio and all that sort of stuff.
This is a league's complete mishandling of a situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, like I mentioned, the Ray Rice incident itself, the domestic violence, yes, while bad, if that was it and the NFL had just said, okay, suspend him for the year. All right, fine, done, good. Move on to next year.
Yeah. Again, obviously completely different crimes, completely different scenario, but it's a little bit similar to what happened to Penn State a couple years ago. They had every opportunity along the way to step in and do the right thing, and they chose not to. And now, granted, this is nowhere near as bad as that. But just I think that if there's a lesson to be taken from this is that when you've got the chance to do the right thing, probably not a bad idea to go ahead and do it. Because if you keep waiting or you keep thinking you can just slide it under the rug, this is what happens.
I think the other thing to think about here too is that I think it's always easier in situations like this to punish someone heavily at first. Because if the video came out and it was just, oh, well, yeah, maybe she did just fall. Well, no harm, no foul. Then, okay, then he can say, you know what, Ray, we messed up. Going to limit your suspension back to the two games. The NFL would have a little egg on its face.
Right.
But not to this extent. And not as negative.
I don't know if this applies to teaching like it does to what I do, Mike, but there's this thing where they say it's easier, it's better, and smarter to be too harsh on a group of people that you're in charge of and back off than it is to not be harsh enough and try to ratchet it up.
Definitely.
Mean? Yeah.
Definitely. You know, if you're – no one's ever going to take you to task for doing your job too well. If they had come out with a year-long suspension – and then video evidence surfaced that said that he didn't hit her, then the NFL could say, you know, we take the issue of domestic violence really seriously. We were kind of acting, we felt were the best interest of all the parties involved.
Right.
New evidence has come to light, and we realized we were maybe overly harsh and were dropping the suspension down.
Well, that's the thing. You can always
pedal back.
You can walk back an 8-game suspension to 4 or 2 or mm-hmm. whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start at 2 and then you go, well, gosh, you weren't harsh enough, then you just look really bad like they do right now.
It does, and it makes you look panicky.
And it just looks like right now that all they're trying to do at this point is just battle back against bad PR. Whereas if they had gone the other way and suspended him for a year and said, oh, we screwed up, well, no one's going to get too bent out of shape about that. We're going to do another show on Thursday, and this whole thing's going to have taken on a whole new life by then, and who knows how it's going to play out. But right now, It sure doesn't look good for Roger Goodell in the NFL.
They need a complete reworking of the priority system in the league. They need a complete, if not change in personnel and positions of leadership, at least a change in attitude.
Onto the field, first week of the NFL season, and we'll start with the very first game of the season. We were talking about it as it was going on during our Basically Sports Show, but Seattle comes out in their home opener on Thursday. The Packers, Greg, your Packers not off to a great start.
You know, Greg, if I were you, I'd get Aaron Rodgers on the phone, Greg, and I'd be like, what are you doing to my team?
Well, it wouldn't be that hard to do. It wasn't like it was tough to get to him when he was on the field Thursday night. It was, wow, that was just, you know, when we did our Super Bowl picks, we both took New Orleans and Denver. I'll ask you, Zach, would you like to have that one back after watching Seattle in the first week?
Yes. I mean, if it was possible for them to look better than they did last year, they looked better than they did last year.
I have to agree.
And, I mean, they lost a couple guys here and there, but it obviously didn't mean a whole lot. I mean, it's hard. It's the first game. The banner goes up. It's either you have too many distractions and you lose, or you're jacked up like nothing else and you're going to roll like the Seahawks did to the Packers.
Yeah.
Marshawn Lynch, 110 yards. Russell Wilson, 191 yards passing, both with two touchdowns each. And, you know, a fairly pedestrian day by Aaron Rodgers. And the thing that was interesting, too, we talked about all preseason about all the penalties being thrown and how they were punishing the rest of the league for the Seahawks. You know how many penalties the Seahawks defense took in the preseason?
A lot, I would imagine.
Zero.
In the preseason?
Zero.
Wow. And that was, the whole thing was aimed at them, wasn't it?
Supposedly.
Well,
supposedly.
I'll tell you this, and usually I'm not one, and we'll see as we go through the rest of the NFL here, I'm not one to really get too bent out of shape one way or the other over week one, but unless something really weird happens, that Seattle team right now I would have to think is the favorite to go to the Super Bowl again because, geez, they just, like you said, they looked better than they looked last year, which usually doesn't happen with a defending Super Bowl champ. Unbelievable. And the Packers, I'm not ready to write them off yet, but – you know, that Seattle team, that's a team that I will say, yeah, I think we saw a really good indication of what they're going to be for the season on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to the full slate of games on Sunday. We'll start in the morning, and we'll start with a shootout in our favorite little rivalry that could. And a game that, a result I didn't think we saw coming, a performance I don't think anyone saw coming. Saints and Falcons. Saints go up 6-0 in the first. Look like they might just start to get churned and run away with it. But Matt Ryan and the Falcons, huge, huge effort there in the second half. Amazing comeback late in that fourth quarter. End up tying it, go to overtime. The Falcons get the field goal and the win. They're 1-0 to start the season over their hated rivals, the Saints, on the back of a 448-yard passing performance by Matt Ryan. I think the Falcons are going to have a different season than they did last year, and I'm also not as confident in my Saints Super Bowl pick as I was again before Thursday.
Oh, see, now this is a perfect example of where I'm not going to get too worked up over week one. I think the Falcons are going to be better. Here's my argument for a lot of these games we're going to talk about. Let's say that this game, exactly as it played out, happened in week nine. As opposed to this first week, would we be as concerned about the Saints? Would we be as up on the Falcons? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I just think it's you know, we kind of like to make fun of it as a little rivalry that could, but I think it's just one of those games where it's just a rivalry game, and you just never know what's going to happen. But if the Falcons, if that offense is back like it looked like it was going to be on Sunday, it's going to be a whole different ball game there in the NFC South.
Yeah, and luckily for New Orleans, you know, Atlanta, they had this at Atlanta. Atlanta came out on fire having to prove that they're not the team they were last year. Things get a little easier for the Saints. They play at Cleveland next week.
They host Minnesota. How are you feeling about that, Greg?
They host Minnesota. They go to Dallas. They host Tampa Bay. And then they're at Detroit in week 7 after their bye. Mm-hmm. So for all intents and purposes, yeah, they lost this first game. And I think the defense might need a little checkup after allowing 448 yards to Matt Ryan. But I would see no reason that in 6 weeks that they're 5-1 and everything's fine. But
yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not going to get too worked up over the Saints losing this game. The only team coming out of week 1 that I'm ready to say, okay, yes, they're probably legit is the Seahawks. You know, it's just a lot of crazy things happened in week 1, but I probably said this a lot last year and turned out to be wrong on every count, so who knows?
We'll move on to the Saints opponent for next week, your Cleveland Browns, Greg.
I can't help but laugh every time I hear that.
After the first half, it looked like it was going to be just what we thought. You know, the Steelers are up 27-3 at half. They're starting to – the camera keeps panning over to Johnny Manziel on the sideline. They show him warming up, and they're like, well, you know, if Brian Hoyer doesn't do anything in these next couple series, we might see Johnny football get his first NFL snaps. And then Brian Hoyer scores a touchdown, and then they score another touchdown. And next thing you know, the Browns and Steelers are tied up at 27 apiece, and you're thinking, could they do it in Pittsburgh? But no, the Steelers pull out a late field goal, survive 30-27, and avoid what would have been a pretty embarrassing loss to the Browns. But as a quasi Browns fan, Greg, you have to be encouraged by what you saw in the second half, at least, right?
But to a point, yeah. I think it's great that they were able to come back and score the points. But by the same token, I am not a bit surprised that once they got to the tie game point, they let the Steelers come down and kick the game winning field goal. So it's encouraging because, believe me, the first half, it was like, wow, this is probably going to be worse than I even thought it was going to be. And believe me, I thought it was going to be pretty bad. But I still think Hoyer's the best option. I know that there's a lot of people that are very high on Johnny Manziel. I am not among them. And it's just – that's going to be the AFC North this season. It will be a lot of games like that. And I think we talked about it in the preview. Yep. I don't know if there's a good team in that division. I think the Bengals are probably the closest thing to it talent-wise, but we've seen them over the years, and I just don't have a lot of faith in anybody.
I've got to ask, because the big thing coming into the season, the bright spot that everyone was pointing to with the Cleveland Browns were their defense. And as you said, Greg, they allowed the Steelers to march down the field and get that field goal once it was all tied up. If the defense was as good as people claimed it was, shouldn't they have been able to hold the Steelers? Hell, shouldn't they have been able to hold the Steelers to less than 27 points
That would be my argument, yeah. I watched that defense in the preseason, and granted, you can't take a lot away from the preseason, but I saw a lot of a team not being able to get off the field on third down. I mean, I saw them in game 3, the quote-unquote dress rehearsal, the Browns gave up a 3rd-and-25, a 3rd-and-18, and a 3rd-and-12. Within a span of about 10 minutes of game time, not actual time, but game time. So I would love to say the Browns are headed back in the right direction, but I'm not so sure right now.
Moving along, stay in the state of Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, I didn't get a chance to watch all the early morning games, but I'm checking my phone.
You mean the afternoon games?
Yeah, the afternoon games.
These are the morning games.
In the world, it's the afternoon games, but okay.
Excuse yourselves. The games start at 10 a.m., I'll have you know. These are the morning.
I wish.
But I'm checking my phone, and it's like, okay, first day of the season. I'm excited. Let me check the scores. What's going on? The Jags are up 17-0?
Yeah.
On the Eagles in Philly? What is going – where is – what? Nick Foles not playing well in the first half. A couple of interceptions there. But the Eagles, they find it within themselves to not lose to the most ugly helmets in the creation of existence. And they become, I think it's either the first or second team to be down 17 points and win by 17 points in a 34-17 win over Jacksonville at home.
I think they're I think I saw somewhere that they're actually like the first team to be shut out in the first quarter and then shut the opposing team out the second quarter.
Well, they didn't shut them out in the second.
I mean, the second half.
Second half.
Oh, they didn't.
It was.
Well, they shut them out in the second half. Yeah.
Down
17-0 at half and ended up winning 34-17.
Every year.
The Jaguars, still the Jaguars, in case you forgot.
Jaguars are who we thought they were.
Right. Every year, we always have that one game that you go, really? That happened? And I thought, this might be that game this year where the Jaguars, because you're always going to, every year, a good team is going to get caught sleeping on opening day. And I thought maybe this would be the case, but I just thought, man, there's just, Philly, they're better than this. I mean, and I just had a hunch that they would – I didn't know they'd come back and hang 34 unanswered on them, but I wasn't so sure that the Jaguars could hold on to that lead, and it turns out they couldn't. But what an upset that would have been had they pulled it off.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
Well, I mean,
Jags-Browns, book it. Mark the calendars, Jags-Browns.
If you're looking for that game that you're talking about, Greg, they lost that game? It's too bad Andy couldn't join us today because
I felt for Andy when I saw the score.
The amount of people that lost in their suicide pools in week one.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know for a fact, I mean, everything I listened to when people were talking about, oh, yeah, in the suicide pool, I'm picking the Bears over the Bills. That's Bills in Chicago week one. That's a gimme, right? The Bears will win that. No. The Bears gave one of those games that the Bears tend to do.
Right.
Where they just kind of fart around the field for a couple hours, and all of a sudden, hey, what? We're in overtime, and we lost to the Bills.
See, but I mean, I'm surprised that the Bears lost, but not as much as everybody else is. I think we talked about this too. The Bills, I don't know that they're a good team, but they're one of those teams that you can't just look past and take for granted. And the Bears, this is the problem. Going into the season with that division, I said the Bears could compete if they didn't lose games, dumb games that they shouldn't lose. And that's exactly what they did in week one. They went out and lost a game playing dumb football that they shouldn't have lost. Because they're better than the Bills. I mean, I think so, aren't they?
Yeah.
They are.
I mean, Jay Cutler, 349, two TDs. That should be a guaranteed win for the Bears if you can get Cutler to do that. But
well, everybody said the defense was going to be so bad for the Bears. I mean, they held Buffalo to, what, 23? Isn't great, but it's not like they gave up 48 points either.
No, and E.J. Manuel actually looked pretty decent, 16-22. And, I mean, it led the Bills to a win. And the Bills did this last year, too, if you remember, with Manuel. Was it week one or week two where they upset the Panthers?
Yeah, it was one of those, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and the Bills have done this before. Remember the Ryan Fitzmagic, where they went 5-0 to start the season.
Right.
Oh,
so
yeah, and everyone's like, the Bills are back, and then, oh.
Right, the Bills are 5-11 to do this sort of thing. So
exactly.
You know, they're at least guaranteed, I mean, they're probably guaranteed a two-win season, because there's always that one weird, there's that one weird week where they somehow manage to beat the Patriots every year.
Well, speaking of the Patriots, somebody might have beaten the Bills to that. The Patriots lost that game.
This one did surprise me, I have to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I said it in the football preview show. I thought the Dolphins were going to be better this year. I just didn't think that they were going to be better this quick.
Right.
And especially because early on in the season, they're usually pretty bad at home for whatever reason. But the Patriots go in. The Patriots are up 20-10 at half. And it seems like the things are just going to keep going the way they are, and because the Patriots are better than the Dolphins. I think we can all assume
yeah.
that with confidence, or could have, at least before Sunday. But in the second half, the Patriots looked awful. Brady had no one to throw to. I mean, he ended up going 29-56
wow.
in passing attempts. And Ryan Tannehill leads the Dolphins and Mike Wallace had an incredible second half there before the Dolphins catches some deep balls and a touchdown. And Miami comes back to win 33-20 on opening day, shutting out the Patriots in the second half.
That one was a shocker, I have to admit. And I thought, like you said, that the Dolphins would be better this year. But I thought they'd be better to the tune of 9-7, 10-6, somewhere in there. Not good enough to beat the Patriots, even if they were at home. Although I guess from what I understand, the Patriots do have some trouble with Miami down there. But I did not expect, if they were going to win this game, I figured it would be kind of like Buffalo did to Chicago, where they would sure. keep it close and get into overtime or get a late field goal or whatever. But to win by 13, this one's a little bit of a shocker. Yeah, and could this be the year that the Patriots aren't as good as we thought they were going into the season? Who knows?
Well, I think this is the problem, too, that I saw, at least, that we talked about before in our preview show, too. Outside of Gronk, who is Tom Brady supposed to throw the ball to?
Right.
You know, he has – you can only – I mean, Peyton Manning did this for a few years, too, where you make a lot of guys better than they are sort of thing. Well, yeah, you could throw anybody out there, and he'll get 60 yards at least receiving because he'll find you. But at some point, if you don't have the guys that can get the separation from the defense and get open, who are you supposed to throw the ball to? And that was the problem I saw, at least for the Patriots, in that second half, was Brady had nowhere to go.
Well, another thing to think about, too, with when you're, you know, and I hate that we always go to the Brady versus Manning comparisons, but I think this is a good example of it. The Colts, and then after that the Broncos, they run an offense that's more capable of taking guys that aren't the greatest receivers and making them better. I don't think the Patriots run that kind of offense to the same extent that the Peyton Manning-led teams have, meaning that I think that Manning throws out of a lot more four-receiver sets and all that than Brady does. So
yes.
If you don't have, you know, Manning, when you've got four and five guys running out there every time, yeah, you're going to find somebody open. But, you know, the Patriots, A, don't have the personnel to do that, and B, they still like to rely on the running game probably more so than the Manning-led offense does. So it's going to be interesting because I really thought the Patriots were easily the number two team behind the Broncos. Now, again, it's only week one, but this game shocked me because I didn't think Miami was going to be this much better this quick, like you said, Zach.
As we move around, we'll go back to the AFC North and another game that was just not a pretty game by any standards. The Bengals win on the road in Baltimore, 23-16.
Now the Ravens are
threw for 345. Joe Flacco threw the ball 62 times.
Wow.
You should not be relying on Flacco to throw more than 40 times in a game.
Well, but
what struck me about this game was everyone had been saying the same thing, that the Cincinnati Bengals were the closest thing to a good team the AFC North had. And then I watched this game like, if this is the best this conference has, then God damn, it's going to be a crime that one of these teams has to make the playoffs.
Did I didn't get to see any of this one. Did Flacco just 60 times run as far as you can and I'll throw it?
Well, I didn't get to see it either, but 345 yards total. So people caught the ball and he threw a touchdown pass.
But you know what? The score of that game, win or lose, either team, that's about what I expected going into it. I really kind of thought Baltimore would pull off the home win. But maybe – I don't know. It's just – it's so hard to get anything out of week one. But that's – I'm a little shocked by that one because I thought Baltimore would get the home win. But then again, what do they have?
It's a terrible, terrible team in a terrible in a terrible division that lost to a slightly less terrible team.
We'll go around the rest of the early games quickly. Houston with a great defensive performance in their opening game against Washington, winning 17-6. RG3 looked pretty bad.
Why did they insist on keeping him making him a pocket passer?
Well, that's the thing. If you're gonna make him a pocket passer, just go with Kirk Cousins, who is, guess what, a pocket passer.
Yeah. Really the biggest news to come out of this game is as good of a day as the Texans had. Jadeveon Clowney, obviously the number one pick overall, going to be a big defensive star in the league, or we all thought so. Out, I believe it's 4 to 6 weeks, or maybe it's 6 to 8, with a tear in his meniscus.
Yeah.
He said that he stepped in a hole on the field, that nothing particular happened to him. But a pretty big loss for Houston in week one.
Well, he looked great in the preseason, and I think with him and J.J. Watt, that was a formidable defensive line. So hopefully for the Texans' sake, it's only 4 weeks. But I heard 4 to 6. I haven't heard 6 to 8.
Yeah, it's probably 4 to 6.
But then again, even with that, you got to wonder when he comes back, will he – because a lot of times guys take a little while to get used to it before they're really fully ready to play on the bad knee again. So hopefully it won't be too much of a what's the word I'm looking for here? A – diversion, I guess, from his career, or a sidetrack. But, and the Washington just – I don't know. We said they were going to be bad, and I think they're going to be bad.
I don't understand how I don't see how they can be good. Everything from the way that they handled the RG3 Shanahan situation last year through their coaching hire. I mean, who's their coach again?
Jay Gruden.
Who sounds like, just like John but looks less creepy.
I mean, did Dan Snyder get confused and think he was hiring John Gruden? Because
well, who was Gruden with before this? He was an offensive coordinator, right?
With Cincinnati, yeah.
Wasn't he also the head coach of like the Orlando Predators in the Arena League?
He was the starting quarterback for the Orlando Predators.
Oh God!
Led them to a couple Arena Bowls.
Hey,
I just don't see how Washington is. I think they're gonna be first draft pick bad.
Yeah, this whole division outside of the Eagles. We went over it. The only team that I think could in that division that could have any sort of hope to maybe on accident become in playoff contention is the Giants because
I suppose we'll get to the Monday game.
We'll get to them and we'll get to the Cowboys a little bit later too. But Titans with a win over the Chiefs.
Jake My Lauder irrational confidence, good. Titans, man.
Yep, the Titans thriving on the irrational confidence of Greg and the Chiefs. Looking like the Chiefs we think they're going to be.
Right. I don't think anybody's surprised that the Chiefs are going to take a couple. You know what the surprising thing about that is, though, is that usually the Chiefs, even when they're not good, they're still pretty competitive at home, and they were at home and they weren't competitive against a team that I think is going to be better this year, maybe a playoff contender, but not that much better than a Kansas City team at home. And The Titans just worked them over.
No, and the bad thing for the Chiefs, too, is they lose Derek Johnson and one of their defensive linemen, I forget his name, but both with ruptured Achilles tendons in the same game.
Oh, man.
It's just, you know, bad timing there for the Chiefs.
Well, yeah, the Titans look tough, man. 26-10, I love it.
Let's see. Vikings beat the Rams pretty convincingly, 34-6. Really the only thing that's interesting to come out of this game, besides how badly, I mean, we thought the Rams are going to be bad, but oh, boy. You know who the leading rusher was for the Minnesota Vikings?
It wasn't Adrian Peterson.
Wasn't even a running back. Cordell Patterson. 3 carries, 102 yards.
Wow.
I think I saw a stat where he is the first wide receiver since the merger to lead a team in rushing for a game.
And since the merger, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, what's that, 34 yards a carry? If you can do that, you're going to have a pretty good season.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's a receiver, so he got a bunch of reverses and laterals and things of that
nature. Yeah, but you would think, I mean, man, to get 100 yards, what was it, like one big run and a couple shorter ones?
There was one huge run for like 60 yards or something like that.
Yeah, I think the Rams, somebody brought this up, and I'll bring it up again. What happened to this great defense that was so good they didn't have any room for Michael Sam? Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that happened to the Rams is Sean Hill got hurt.
Oh, jeez.
So Austin Davis is the quarterback for your St. Louis Rams.
Well, I'll just bring up that back, I believe it was in 1999, Trent Green got hurt. And then I forget who the second guy in line was. And then there was this guy named Kurt Warner that took over as a third-string quarterback. So you never know.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't put any money on it. But I'm just saying, if you're a Rams fan, there is always that might win the lottery, glimmer of hope there. So you can look at it that way.
No word on whether Austin Davis also bagged groceries like Kurt Warner. and then the final early game, did anyone ever actually see this game in any parts of the country at any point?
I did.
Jets Raiders?
I tuned in specifically for the uniforms. I got it.
They were one of the games that we got because we get the Jets.
NFL hates Canada.
We get the Jets. We get Jets games, we get Lions games, and we get Bills games up in Southern Ontario. So unless we've got like one of the NFL viewing packages, our choices are not that great usually.
Yeah, there's nothing of note in this game. The Jets won 19-14.
The Jets, I will say, as someone who watched the first half of this game, the Jets kind of looked like garbage. So the fact that they won, I guess, is good.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you guys in a little secret. I'm kind of like a closet Jets fan. I have been for a long time. I don't know why. But even as a closet Jets fan, let's just put it this way. If the Browns and the Packers both had plane crashes, I'd end up being a Jets fan. So
I like how you say like closet Jets fan, like it's something to be ashamed of.
I think it is
funny that you went for plane crashes to be a Jets fan, but
see, now that was something that I didn't even plan. It just turned out that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess the only thing of note is rookie Derek Carr with his first start for the Raiders there. 151 yards, two TDs.
Any interceptions?
No.
No, that's not bad.
Yeah, 28 for 32 for the young guy out of Fresno State.
Jets are 1-0.
We'll move on to the afternoon. Only two afternoon games because CBS loves tennis.
Does that make any sense?
All the AFC games are in the morning.
And to anybody, why you would pick tennis over the NFL?
Because the U.S. Open's a big deal.
It ain't that big a deal.
Some European dude won it. Not even Djokovic or Federer. Just some guy.
Well, I mean, let's be honest about it for a second here. That a World Series game would get crushed by the NFL. What they think was going to happen to the U.S. Open in tennis?
Well, I mean, there were only two games on in that afternoon slot, but one of them, of course, is a big one that gets national attention all over the place. That is the 49ers and the Cowboys. This game was in Dallas, correct?
Right.
Yes. You wouldn't know that from the crowd.
Yeah. Did you see the crowd in Dallas?
Sure did.
It looked awfully red to me.
It looked like crowds used to look when the Cowboys were good and they would go play in, say, Arizona or wherever, really. And I just wonder how they felt getting a little bit of their own medicine there, those Dallas fans.
Yeah, and a beat writer for ESPN Dallas after the game asked Jerry, or was talking to Jerry Jones postgame like they all do, because Jerry Jones is going to give you a good quote because he's Jerry Jones. He put it out in a tweet, "Jerry, when I suggested close to half the crowd wore red, Jerry said, did you count them? And the writer said, well, it was pretty close to it. And Jerry responded with bullshit. Jerry in denial. It's pretty red in those stands. And maybe it's just because all the Cowboy fans left after Tony Romo threw three interceptions.
In a row.
In the first half.
Three
in a row.
Oh, Tony Romo.
Tony's going to Romo.
Exactly.
And he did it pretty hard in this game. San Francisco was up 21-3 after the first quarter. And yeah, it ended up being only an 11-point game, but
it was never that close.
It wasn't that close. Those are garbage time points that really – but can I just – I heard a lot of people picking the Cowboys in this, saying they thought that the Cowboys' defense matched up well against the 49ers' offense.
Nobody says the Cowboys' defense matches well with anyone.
This is what I've heard. And – I just watched this game, and I was awestruck by halftime. I'm like, wow. And the only thing I could think of was the Dallas Cowboys are not a good football team.
I picked the Cowboys to win this, but that was because – I'm going to make this statement right now for everybody that's listening to hear. Mm-hmm. Never again in my life will I ever take anything said by an ESPN so-called football expert seriously ever again.
Why is that?
Because everything that I listen to them say – and followed their advice, blew up in my face. And I'm not talking like a 50% rate where some of it was right. No, every single thing. I heard, oh, the 49ers aren't going to be that good this year. And, you know, the Cowboys can get this one because it's at home and blah, 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 and this and that. And no sorry.
I learned that last season when they were changing up who was going to be calling the plays for Tony Romo. And someone goes to Chris Berman, so, Chris, how do you think this will affect the Cowboys' performance? And Chris Berman actually said, like, on air, I don't know. This is the analysis I come to ESPN for.
I just, again, it's only week one, so it's hard to say if the 49ers aren't going to fall back a little bit like I thought they were. But we talked about it in the preview, Zach. This might be the year that the Cowboys actually don't win eight games.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see any – now, again, they're playing the 49ers, who are a good football team, but I didn't see anything on that field with Dallas to make me think that they could win six games this year.
No, and because the Cowboys' defense is garbage.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And the offense is supposed to carry them. Now, I mean, Tony Romo, he ends up with 23 of 37, 281 yards. DeMarco Murray rushed for 118 yards on 22 carries. The offense was okay. But this is the thing with Dallas. Tony Romo's a fine fantasy quarterback because he puts up stats.
Sure.
However, Tony Romo also throws three interceptions. And the Cowboys had four turnovers on the day to the San Francisco zero. And I mean, that's been the Cowboys' problem for the last forever.
You got to get rid of Tony Romo. Each year, he just makes that argument for everyone else.
But he's fine. He's okay.
Three interceptions in a row is not okay.
That's what I'm saying. He's fine. Like, he puts up the numbers, but he also puts up the – he's like Brett Favre that doesn't win.
Yeah.
But at least Brett Favre got the victories to sort of justify it all.
Right.
But...
That's what I'm saying. He's like Brett Favre that doesn't win. So, yeah, it's a horrible opener for the Cowboys. You know, Jerry Jones can think what he wants to think, but this team ain't going nowhere.
Well, let me ask you guys.
They'll probably do him a favor and lose many more games and restart the Cowboy dynasty.
We've talked about it ever since we started doing this show. We've talked about it on Basically a Sports Show. We've talked about it on the boards. We've talked about it everywhere. This team needs to crater. They need to bottom out because until they do, this is what you're going to
I hate to cut you off, Greg, but we've got a bit of breaking news at the moment.
Breaking news?
Really?
Jerry Jones sued Dallas Cowboys owner accused of sexual harassment.
You're kidding.
This was an old thing, wasn't it?
It just popped up tonight.
Oh, my God.
You sure? This isn't the pictures that somebody took of him and shopped around? Because I saw that story like a couple months ago.
No, this is not a couple months ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Here is the link to the story.
Oh, my.
Show me the link.
Huffington Post. Let's see.
Photos of Jones and Chandler in it earlier this summer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So it's the pictures from earlier in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just actually getting sued now?
Yes.
How about that?
Oh, my. Well, anyway.
You know what? This could be a good thing for the Cowboys. Maybe he'll be so distracted by the court case that, like, people who know how to run a football team will then run things to the Cowboys and they can maybe win more than eight games.
I think that there isn't anyone in the Cowboys organization that knows how to run a football team.
Well,
that's true. He probably purged them all by now.
Let me ask you guys this. Two things on the Cowboys. First off, do we believe that a change of scenery would help Tony Romo? Because I think that just being the Cowboys quarterback that always throws interceptions, it's just – I just don't know how he's ever going to succeed there.
I think at this point that's probably not a bad idea. The environment's just become too toxic for him. Like, I don't know, send him to Jacksonville or something. You know, nobody cares. Nobody cares if he wins or not, and he might actually pull some games out.
Because I'm with Zach. I think he's a very talented quarterback. He's shown that he can really do some great things, but
he's shown that he can do things, and then he throws the ball to the other team.
Maybe we should we implement the rule we had from last year? We're not going to talk about them again until he throws.
That's what I was going to say. We've talked way too much about the Cowboys.
Wait until week 16 when he throws the interception that cost them a playoff berth.
I swear to God, if the Cowboys are seven and eight going into the last week of the season and they need to win to make the playoffs, I'm just gonna leave.
But at that point, I'm just like, well, I'm just gonna write Tony Romo in for a fourth quarter interception.
Final note on this game that I want to put out there, because like you said, Greg, maybe the 49ers look too good. I think that's also a product of the Dallas defense.
Yeah,
Colin Kaepernick looked very, very good, and the passing game looked great. Let's see what he does in a week or two. Let's see what happens the first time they play Seattle. You know.
Good luck.
I mean, they host Chicago next week. They're at Arizona the week after that, and then they host Philly. So those are three games that are probably going to be harder than they think. So we'll see where the 49ers are in a few weeks.
Well, now that I've heard that the Cowboys had four turnovers and San Francisco still only managed, 28 against that defense, that makes me wonder a little bit too. But, yeah, just like last year, when he throws the interception, which he may have done already for all we know, but – we won't talk about him again. I'm fine with that.
Okay. Moving on to the nightcap. Colts Broncos.
Oh.
Andrew Luck marches into Mile High. Colts are going to start the season off great. Right? Right?
No.
Peyton Manning does what Peyton Manning does. Puts the Colts up 24-7. Or Broncos. Excuse me. Sorry. Habit. Puts the Broncos up 24-7 at halftime. But then Andrew Luck does what Andrew Luck does, and he puts the Colts in position to maybe make a comeback there late in the game. Ends up throwing for 370 yards and two touchdowns, but not a lot else going for the Colts. The defense still looks suspect. Peyton Manning still looks on point. And Peyton Manning completes the full sweep and beats the 32nd NFL team in a 31-24.
That's right. He didn't get the win against the Colts last year.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if I'm a Colts fan, I'm kind of encouraged that they were down on the mats like that in a place that's really tough to play at and managed to come back and make it interesting.
But yes, they do that. That's what Andrew Luck does.
Well,
Andrew Luck makes comebacks. Andrew Luck is clutch. He's great at that. But imagine if Andrew Luck didn't have to do that every game. Imagine if he didn't have Trent Richardson as his running back only leading the game with 20 yards.
Imagine
if he had a defense that could cover receivers. Imagine he had a defense that could stop the run.
This was the problem last year for the Colts, if I remember correctly. They kept getting down early, and then Luck would have an impressive game, but you know, sooner or later, you do that enough times, you're not going to be able to come back.
You look at the playoff game that they had against Kansas City, and amazing comeback. Imagine if you had done that in the first half,
and if you hadn't gotten down, was it 34 points or whatever it was?
Yeah.
I would imagine if you're a Colts fan like you are, Zach, this team's got to be very frustrating because we watched them play last year three almost flawless football games.
Yeah.
And then they turned around. Who'd they lose to that was just like, are you kidding? Because
they lost to Jacksonville at one point, I think.
Right. But
you've got
Andrew Luck. Hopefully the front office can start building around him and fix some of the problems, and I think they're going to be solid, but...
The other problem they have is the pass rush, because Robert Mathis was going to be out for the first four games anyway because of a PED suspension. But then I guess he ruptured his Achilles practicing the other day.
The hell?
Yeah, ruptured Achilles are just going around the league like it's, you know, a common cold. So he's out for the season. So he's a second-year man, but his name is Bjorn Werner. He's a German that played at Florida State.
I was going to say, he's either German or Swedish.
No, he's Bjorn Werner.
Nice.
Werner spelled with a W.
Ah, yes.
And his first name is B-J-O-E-R-N.
Bjorn.
It was the Bjorn name that made me think he might be Scandinavian.
Yeah. They let go of Dwight Freeney 2 years ago, and he's still being semi-productive for the Chargers.
He looked pretty good last night.
Yeah, I know. I was watching that game, and I'm just like, imagine if Dwight was still on the team.
It would help.
It would help. It would help more than what they've got. But the team's clearly got holes, but they're still – as long as Andrew Luck's there, and Reggie Wayne looked pretty decent in his first game back as well. So I'm encouraged by the second half, and of course, I can't get too mad losing to Peyton.
Yeah,
he does what he does. He looked good as always.
So you guys asked me about the Browns earlier, and this is exactly kind of how I feel. Yeah, they came back and all that, but it was a mirage. I know they're not a good football team, so it's I think the Colts, unless my irrational confidence tightens, really take a couple steps up this year, I think the Colts are still the team to beat in that division. So I wouldn't get too worried about it.
Yeah, we'll move on to Monday night, and you know. Well, despite everything that happened, as we talked about on Monday morning, everyone forgot about Sunday, and we go into Monday night, people are still not really caring about the Monday night games, and really, there wasn't a whole lot to care about, at least in the first game.
The Giants proved they are not a good team.
No, and Eli Manning made a couple of last year Eli Manning throws. Things that he can't do that this year, and he threw a couple bad interceptions. As the Giants were trying to make a comeback there in the second half. But the Lions win 35-14. Matthew Stafford, 346 yards, 22 for 32. Calvin Johnson, 164 yards receiving and two touchdowns. Just a beast.
Yes.
And that's the best of the Lions. That's the good Lions.
Right.
If they can manage to put that together for a full season, I have no idea where they could end up just because...
I think that if they can play like they played against the Giants for a full season, they win that division.
Sure.
Because the Packers...
And again,
I'm not going to put a whole lot of stock into the first week, but what I will say about what I saw with the Packers against the Seahawks is that all the problems they had last year are still there this year. Mm-hmm. So you got to think about that. But yeah, the Lions look great.
I mean, the Lions look great, but then again, the Lions were also 6-3 last year and poised to walk away of the division. And
right,
then, well, we all saw how that ended.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, like I said, the best you could have seen out of the Lions, 417 yards on offense, holding the Giants to 197 yards.
Is it possible Jim Caldwell is a better coach than we give him credit for?
I heard, well, no. but
don't put too fine a point on it, Zach. Tell us what you really think.
Well, I think the thing that somebody pointed out that I think might be the only reason Jim Caldwell might work, I forgot where I heard it, but where Jim Schwartz wasn't, you know, kind of out of control maniac.
Yeah, that's, you heard that from me. We talked about it on the preview.
Was it you?
Yeah.
I'm getting
quoted, but this is awesome. But yeah, it might not have been me, but I brought up kind of the same thing. But go ahead.
And so Jim Caldwell's kind of little laid back and kind of just let the team play and use their talents and play well. So if that's the case, and he just, everything just kind of, the weight is lifted off, there's a little bit more pressure, they play a little bit more free and happy, and they can do all the things they did on Monday night, then great. But, we'll see what happens later in the year.
Just kind of being like, completely emotionless and boring, and you have all of these angry Lions players who are used to playing under Schwartz, and they're like, "Oh, I'm so angry!" And Jim Caldwell is like, "Calm down, young man. Let me tell you a story."
It could be
and then
that
he just kind of soothes everyone into like this state of zen.
Or they're either that, or they're just distracted because they're like, "Is that dude dead or alive? We're not sure."
But
they've got Carolina next week, so we're really not going to know anything until they play the Packers in week three.
Right. Oh, that was the game. We forgot to talk about the Panthers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We'll do that right now. First, I just want to mention, remember I thought how the Giants might accidentally get into playoff contention? Yeah, no. The Eagles are going to run away that division. Nobody in that division is good. Congratulations, Philadelphia. You are the 2014 NFC East champions.
Yeah, you can probably start printing the T-shirts right now if you want to.
Yep. We'll go back to Sunday real quick just to talk about Panthers, Buccaneers. The thing to take out of this game, Cam Newton did not start for the Panthers.
No.
Cam Newton was injured. Who came to rescue the Panthers from certain destruction against the Buccaneers on the road? Derek Anderson. 230 yards and two touchdowns?
So that just tells me how bad this Buccaneers team is. That the Panthers are like, I'll just put Derek Anderson in. We'll be fine.
Yeah, a game that was started between Derek Anderson and Josh McCown. Not a great game. 20-14 final score. Three turnovers there for the Buccaneers, ultimately spelling their doom. But maybe the Panthers, I mean, if Cam Newton can be healthy and maybe play well with this team.
Sure.
I don't think Derek Anderson's not any sort of long-term solution. Hopefully that's just for the week.
I just think it's telling. This is just how bad the Buccaneers are. They couldn't even beat a Derek Anderson-led Panthers.
Well, right. See,
why is Derek Anderson still a backup quarterback in this league?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. But
why is Brady Quinn a backup quarterback? Who knows?
Two things that I took away from this was we kind of buried the Panthers in our preview, and I thought, you know, are they? And again, it's hard to tell because we don't know really what to make of the Buccaneers. But maybe the Panthers aren't going to be as bad as we thought they were going to be.
Maybe, but I think just as hard as it is to tell. I mean, they're playing the Buccaneers.
Right.
They're not playing with Cam Newton. You don't know.
I will. I'll go ahead.
See how they pull it out in a couple weeks. But yeah,
I will say this: I don't think that Josh McCown is the guy you should have at quarterback in Tampa Bay.
No.
I think if Mike Glennon's still there, he's probably your better choice. These McCown guys, I don't know how they do it. I mean, you want to talk about Derek Anderson. How do these McCown guys keep hanging around?
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
McCown stepped
I keep
in for,
confusing. I keep confusing them. Like, there's what? There's like Luke and then what, Josh?
This one is Josh. Luke is not in the league. Josh is still here.
Isn't there a Cade McCown, or am I imagining things?
Probably.
And then, of course, there's the forgotten one, Zeppo McCown. But
yeah, right.
But McCown, he stepped in and he did a nice job last year for the Bears when Cutler was out. And just like Matt Flynn, these guys, they seem to be able to cash in these backup starts. And
Matt Flynn is a goddamn genius.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to walk away injury-free career. Millions of dollars. The only thing he has to worry about is if, like, he has a kid. And then when his kid's like 10 or so, his like kid's friends look up his dad and they're like, "Hey, your dad played in the NFL. Really? Was he any good?" Well, not really.
Hard to say. He only played two games.
Yeah, but Derek Anderson sighting. Congratulations on
that. Yeah, I was shocked when I saw that too. My first thought was, what the hell happened to Cam Newton? And my second thought was, Derek Anderson? I think he was still wearing number 3 even, wasn't he? Same number he wore with the Browns, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, why change what's working for you?
God bless him. He's still getting a paycheck. I'll give him that.
let's go back to Monday and round out the week with the final game of the weekend, the Mike Bowl with the Cardinals playing the Cardinals.
My two teams.
The first half of this game was garbage.
Yeah, it really was.
I think going back, dating back to the preseason, because they played each other in the final week of the preseason too.
Right.
And I think that game ended up being like 12-9 or something.
Yeah.
And it was all field goals. Yeah. So then we go into this game, and there's three field goals in the first half. It's like, oh my God.
In the first half, it's like 6-3 San Diego. And it's
is this what we're dealing with today?
The San Diego Chargers are going to take the Nashville Predators approach. Just like, we're going to try to make the playoffs entirely off field goals.
Going, what, 0-8-8, basically?
If we could tie, if we could just tie games on field goals.
But in the second half, offenses kind of open up a little bit. Phillip Rivers and the Chargers, they get two touchdowns in the third quarter to go up. Looks like they're going to just kind of ease through the rest of this game. But then the Cardinals make something of themselves. They get Carson Palmer,
rallies the troops,
does well there in the fourth quarter, and they pull out a last-second victory over the San Diego Chargers, 18-17, in a real barn burner to close out the weekend. But
18-17, that sounds like a Canadian football score.
Yeah, but yeah, Carson Palmer.
Someone got a rogue at the end there and pulled it out.
Wouldn't you, if you're the San Diego Chargers at this point, wouldn't you want to send some sort of a petition to the league office and ask not to be put on any more nighttime, primetime games?
Well, the problem is, this is the problem. Because every year they're going to have the Monday night doubleheader.
Mm-hmm.
So the second game has to be in the Western time zones.
Right.
And usually it's the Chargers, because it's either the Chargers have to host it, or they're going to the Raiders, or they're going to the Cardinals. The 49ers and the Seahawks are always going to be protected by Fox or whatever.
Right, and you're not. No one's going to burn Seattle or San Francisco on the second Monday night game. It's just not going to happen.
The second Monday night game, because this game, you know, it started at what, like 10 o'clock Eastern.
It was like 10:30, I think.
Actually, I only watched the first quarter of it, and god damn was that a mistake on my part, because this might be a good game to
watch. It's great for me because it's not like too late. I can still watch it. I love watching a football game, but you know, you kind of just shove those ones away. I think last year it was the Houston Texans that went to San Diego.
So last year was the massive San Diego collapse, and this wasn't it was another collapse, but it wasn't quite as egregious, but
yeah.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, you know, we all like the Chargers coming into the season to be better and a serious playoff contender. Are we concerned about this, or are the Cardinals actually going to carry over from last year and still be pretty good this year?
I'm trying not to panic.
I'm thinking I'm leaning with the Cardinals.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm trying not to panic on the Chargers front here because it's only week one. But I'm not going to lie. If the thought's popping into my head that this is like we saw the same thing happen last year, and I'm starting to think maybe this is more of a personnel thing. Maybe this is Joe Thornton and the Sharks. Like, maybe there's just something about Phillip Rivers that, for whatever reason, all the talent in the world, he just can't hang on to these big leagues.
Isn't he kind of a yelling, screaming, getting in his receiver's face kind of quarterback?
He is, yes.
Yeah, see, I don't like that. Dan Marino was like that, and just I don't know. But I think the Chargers will be okay. I hope the Cardinals – I hope they do carry it over from last year, because it would really make that division even more interesting, the NFC West. Mm-hmm. And we'll see. If I'm the Chargers, I just got to worry that you know, you keep getting these leads and you can't close it out.
That's why I'm saying it might be a personnel problem, because this goes back into the Turner days.
Yeah, you can't blame North Turner for this one.
Exactly. And so maybe it's a Phillip Rivers thing. I don't know.
But yeah, that is week one in the NFL.
Any big surprises that we didn't talk about? Like, what was your biggest surprise this week?
Bills. Probably.
I mean, the Bills winning is a big surprise. I think it's the Dolphins. I thought they were going to be better. I had high hopes for the Dolphins. I had them probably at least contending for the playoffs, maybe even stealing that final wild card spot in the AFC, because, again, somebody has to. But
someone has to get in.
I was actually very impressed with them. I'm a lot higher on them after week one than I was even before the season when I thought well of him. So,
if you want to talk about sneaking into the playoffs, imagine that in the CFL, someone from the East has got to.
Yeah, they have to put somebody in there, right? I think for me the biggest the Dolphins a pretty big surprise, but I think that the Titans just dismantling the Chiefs at home like that was a bit of a shocker to me. That would be my biggest surprise. My biggest disappointment was the Packers not looking like they addressed anything from the problems they had last season. But again, Seattle, wow, we might see our first back-to-back Super Bowl champion since the Patriots did it. I think.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm going to go that far and just crown the Seahawks right now.
Got to crown them.
Crown their ass. I think my biggest disappointment is probably the Giants. I thought I would at least see a little bit more from them than what you ended up seeing.
I want to say I was disappointed in the Cowboys, but deep down, I really knew I wasn't.
Looking at the slate of games for next week, we've officially opened the real Thursday night football schedule with Ravens-Steelers. You know, having the Ravens on primetime all on their lonesome on Thursday, I'm sure we're going to talk all about
Lord.
That football. Actually, the game itself, right?
Yeah, you think it'll even come up?
With the game?
Yeah.
No. I mean, there's going to be plenty of it, especially with Jim Nance and Phil Sims.
Oh, that's right. CBS has got the some of the Thursday night games this year, don't they?
Well, they have the first half of the Thursday
night
games.
I get to listen to Phil Sims try to talk about domestic violence. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's like the old days back when ESPN and TNT used to split the Sunday night package. I forgot about that.
But the game is also being simulcast. You can either watch it on CBS or NFL Network.
Really?
I don't know why they even bother. I mean, when the Patriots were going for the undefeated year.
Yeah.
And the game against the Giants was on a Saturday night. And they played it on NFL Network, on Fox, and on CBS so that everyone could get their share of the pie. But
I like that it's going to be on the NFL Network because that way I can watch it on my iPad while we're doing the show. Otherwise, I can't see it. Not that I'm that excited about it.
You'll be like 10 minutes behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. On to Sunday, Dolphins-Bills, both 1-0 matchups.
Where's
Huge
it at?
Huge AFC East implications.
Where is it?
It's in Buffalo.
I like the Bills in that. I really do. Seriously.
You're telling me that the Dolphins and the Bills are battling for first place in the AFC East.
Just like the old days.
Well, I mean, the Jets also won. But who do the Jets play? The Jets are playing at your Packers in the afternoon, Greg.
Yeah.
Oh, the Greg Bowl. Since he's, you know, you've come out as a closet
champion. I can't help it. I've always loved the uniforms. Like, what can I say?
I was going to say, are you confused because they wear the same shade of green as the Packers? So.
Yeah. It actually goes back to like Joe Namath and Emerson Boozer, and back when I was but a wee lad.
I can't hate on that. Then Joe Namath is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
The race for last place goes on in Washington as the Jags make a visit.
Oh boy!
Oh. Yeah. Who's going to get that number one draft pick?
I think the Jaguars are good. Just because they play with more spirit, I think, than Washington does. I like the Jaguars in that one.
Washington just seems like a train wreck at this point, whereas. Right. I mean, the difference – okay, neither of them are good football teams, but Jacksonville at least is playing like a football team that's put together correctly. They're just not very good.
Yeah, I think they're well coached and all that, yeah.
Like, I mean, they're well coached. You know, it's put together competently. They're just not good. Whereas Washington is just a dumpster fire, and they don't know what they're doing, and they've got their star quarterback playing a style that he's not proficient in. It's good. Jacksonville's going to win. It might not be like a pretty game. It probably won't be a pretty game, but Jacksonville is going to walk out with the victory.
Patriots travel to Minnesota to even up the season while the Vikings are undefeated, of course. Who will get their first win between the Saints and the Browns in Cleveland? Can Drew Brees play outside? Will Johnny Manziel throw a pass? Intrigue, drama, betrayal.
I just hope that – here's what I hope for this game, okay? That if the Browns, a lot of times early in the season, they stick with the white uniforms. If they do that, for the love of God, please wear the white pants with them. If you wear the home brown jersey, Saints, please show up like you did against Atlanta with the gold pants and the white jerseys. That's all I'm hoping for.
Keep the brown and black pants at home.
I like the brown pants.
You really do?
Yeah.
I could almost tolerate them if they had stripes.
I like different colors.
Well.
I like colors.
I just have to think that the Browns are just going to hope that Drew Brees is gentle with them.
Yeah, it's supposed to be in the 60s on Sunday and pretty nice out, so I don't think that the weather's going to be an issue for the Saints. But you never
know. I don't mind the Browns actually wearing the color brown. That's fine by me.
Okay.
Do you like the orange pants?
I do, actually. If I had my way about it, they would go back to their early 80s, late 70s look with the orange pants, yeah.
Whatever happened to those?
I don't. They brought them back in one season. I don't remember what year it was. They brought them back for like 1 year, and then they just kind of disappeared again. That's the last we ever saw of them.
When they had their orange alternate jersey, did they ever wear the brown pants with the orange jersey?
No. I don't think so.
I liked that orange alternate jersey, actually. I liked the drop shadow on the numbers.
But I actually liked it, too. A lot of people hated it, but I kind of liked it. But like Zach's point, you know, like he brought up, that they're the Browns, so they probably should drop a little brown in there somewhere.
The drop shadow was brown.
That's true. Like,
I don't know what you guys want.
Let's see.
And they're going to be wearing like neon orange and vault and gray next year anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Why do I get the feeling that next year I'll be like pining for the days when they wore the white jerseys and the brown pants?
Can we call them the Cleveland Anthracites next year?
I would love to. I actually hope not, but.
Falcons, Bengals, both 1-0.
That's an interesting matchup.
Lions, Panthers, also both 1-0 in Carolina. You know, the road doesn't get any easier for your Chargers, Mike. They host the Seahawks this week.
Oh, Lord.
They host. Okay, it's host not in Seahawks, Seattle. Yes. They're no. not in Seattle.
That is true.
So, let's see how good you are without your 12th man that you stole from Texas A&M.
Careful what you wish for, dude.
Also, 5 afternoon games this week, so enjoy that. And Jets-Packers, like I mentioned. Sunday night, you got the Bears looking for their first win as they go to Levi's Stadium to officially open up 49ers' new park in Santa Clara. And Monday night, the Indianapolis Colts host your Philadelphia Eagles.
That'll be interesting, too.
Yes.
I think the Colts win that handedly because I don't think the Eagles are that good. I just think they're good within the context of the NFC East.
That's true.
Whereas the Indianapolis Colts, they struggled early against the Broncos, but at the end of the day, they were able to hang for the Broncos.
In Denver.
So I think that says a lot about the talent level, how good of a team Indy is, and I just think Philadelphia is going to get exposed anytime they're not beating up on the dregs of the NFC.
Week 2 in college, a few big ranked games, some surprising results. We'll start towards the top. Florida State, you know, they played the Citadel. Congratulations for your school record, 18th straight win, Florida State.
That should count as a half a win, don't you think?
Yeah, well, it doesn't. Alabama with a 41-0 win over Florida Atlantic. The game was called in the fourth quarter due to lightning. Lightning on the field in Eugene, Oregon. Michigan State, Oregon, number 7 at number 3, and this was an intense game. This was a really good college football game. Michigan State, 24 points in the second quarter, really establishing themselves on the ground and in the air. They looked good in that first half, but then Oregon decided, wait, we're Oregon. We're at home. This is what we do. And they put up 28 points in the second half to end up with a fairly big win against Michigan State, 46-27.
Well, how many times have we seen it over the years where a team will get the lead on Oregon in the first half like that, and they just can't hang with them the rest of the way? You got to beat Oregon all four quarters, and you can't. I saw Michigan State had the lead. I was very happy about it, but I knew that there was still a lot of football game left to be played. I'm not at all surprised by the result. Oregon does this to teams all the time. They're tough to hang with for four quarters at home.
Yeah, I saw bits and pieces of this game, and I was impressed with how well Michigan State came out and really kind of tried to establish themselves. But you're right; it's so hard to keep up with Oregon, especially when you're up in Autzen Stadium in Eugene. It's a tough place to play, and so with the win, Oregon jumps from number 3 to number 2 in the polls, and they get 16 first place votes this week to Florida State's 38. So good job. by the Ducks.
Yeah.
Moving on along, Oklahoma beat the crap out of Tulsa, 52-7. Sorry, Tulsa. Auburn beat the crap out of San Jose State.
Woo!
Sorry, San Jose State.
Woohoo!
59-13. And then we get to number eight. Or who was number eight? Greg, your Ohio State Buckeyes. We were waiting for them to eventually lose that game because without Braxton Miller, they were going to be down. But what a way to lose a football game as the Buckeyes did. Michigan or Virginia Tech just came out on fire, going up 21-7 on the Buckeyes there after the first half. And then Ohio State stormed back to make this thing a game in late into the game. But a couple of just awful plays there by the Buckeyes doom their fate, and they lose at home in their home opener to Virginia Tech.
I don't remember the last time they lost their home opener. I really don't. I'm sure it's been a very long time. But obviously the reaction to them losing this game as well is because they didn't have Braxton Miller. But last I checked, Braxton Miller didn't play in the secondary. I watched that game, and Virginia Tech, there were guys so wide open. I mean, they would take a shot at the receiver. There'd be nobody around him. It'd just be him in the green field. This Buckeyes team, even with Braxton Miller, I wasn't sure they were deserving of their, what was it, they came into the season fifth?
Yeah.
Ranked fifth?
Yeah.
I didn't think they were deserving of it at that point, but last week I said, well, maybe they go 10-2 for the season. I'm not so sure that's even a realistic goal at this point. They're not a very good team. It's as simple as that. They've got some issues, and especially on defense in that secondary, because Virginia Tech's not known as a passing team.
No.
And they just came in and just threw the ball at will all over the place on the Buckeyes. So they've got some problems they need to work out.
Ohio State drops to number 22 in the rankings. Virginia Tech, they jump all the way up into the rankings, into the 17th position out of being unranked previously. So good job there by the Hokies.
I'm not so sure that 22 might not be a little too high for the Buckeyes at this point.
Well, there's... You know, it's tough to see them lose the home opener like that to Virginia Tech like that. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Well.
Lost season. Maybe you win the Big Ten.
I doubt it.
Maybe.
That Michigan State team's pretty darn good. They'll come back. They've got Kent State this week, but.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
The Flashes aren't going to give them a game.
You never know.
Moving on to number 9, Texas A&M. They won 73-3 over poor little Lamar.
How did what's the new guy's
Kenny Hill?
How's Kenny Football? How did he do?
Kenny Football, really?
Well, why not?
In an interview this week, he said he prefers Kenny Trill rather than Kenny Football.
Kenny what?
Trill.
Trill?
Trill.
Why? I don't get it.
Trill is it's chill and
oh.
What does the TR part stand for?
Thrill.
Yeah, no. Tremendous something? I don't remember.
Yeah, okay.
I don't remember, but anyway.
Damn kids these days with their slangs.
Damn kids.
You don't get to name yourself, dude, so you're Kenny Football.
Well, that was the other nickname for him. That wasn't one he made up.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, he passed for 283 yards and 4 TDs. So, he's still in the Heisman consideration. Lamar, they got the field goal there in the first quarter.
Good
but,
for them.
You know, oh well. Baylor number 10.
That these week one games are exactly the reason why a basketball style tournament would not work for college football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yep. Number 10, Baylor. Bryce Petty did not play in this game. He was injured. So the Baylor backup quarterback, he throws for 5 touchdowns. 70-6 win over Northwestern State.
Northwestern State.
Yeah.
I don't even know where that is.
Do you know where Northwestern State is?
I'm going to say Washington State. Just
incorrect.
Oh.
They are from Louisiana.
Of course.
And do you know what their nickname is?
Yes, it's the Demons.
They are the Demons.
I cheated. I'm not going to lie.
I heard that click in the background.
Uh-huh.
I thought that.
I cheated.
Their logo is the state of Louisiana with a flaming N and pitchfork on top of it.
Okay.
Northwestern State Demon. Northwestern State plays in – okay.
Well,
Northwestern,
it was like
Louisiana.
We were talking about before we started tonight with the fantasy football thing in college. That's a team that you would make up, the Northwestern State Demons. Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on, number 11, UCLA. They come back from a – they still didn't look good. This UCLA team, they're 2-0, yes, and they had their struggles against Virginia on the road. They come back to the Rose Bowl. They think, oh, well, they'll be fine. They're just playing Memphis in the Rose Bowl.
Uh-huh.
They only win 42-35.
Two things here. First off, it's Memphis. You're at home, and you're home opener, and first off, you only win by 7, and you give up 35 points to freaking Memphis?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah, this UCLA team, everyone that – I mean, yes, they're winning the games.
This is what happened. This is karma for getting rid of your shoulder stripes, UCLA.
They moved from number 11. They moved down a spot to number 12.
As they should. I don't think
they're number 12.
No, I don't either. Well, use what I always use when I try to do rankings, okay? At 12, could they beat Michigan State? No.
No. Ole Miss?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Stanford will stomp them. You know, no. I think Arizona State beats them. Maybe not Virginia.
After the way UCLA played in the first two games, I'm almost sure that the Sun Devils can beat them.
Maybe Virginia Tech might. I don't know. Wisconsin, eh. Mm-hmm. But you know what
Kansas
I mean?
State, eh. Yeah, they're lower teens. UCLA.
I would agree with that.
12 is not them.
No,
they're gonna get a wake up call here. I don't know if it's this week. They could get a wake up call. They go to Dallas to play Texas. But we'll talk about Texas in a minute because, oh, boy. Anyway, LSU with a 56-0 win over Sam Houston State. Again, thanks for playing. Ole Miss, 41-3 over Vanderbilt.
Yeah, the Commodores really falling back to earth quickly after James Franklin, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. And in the final game between Notre Dame and Michigan, a classic series between two classic college football teams, Michigan gets shut out for the first time since 1984.
Wow.
In a 31-0 win for the Fighting Irish.
You know, they talked about that. I was of the thought that this is a great traditional rivalry until they tore it to pieces during that game. And not,
yeah.
I mean, they didn't make it sound like it was a bad rivalry, but they're like, you know, really, if you look at it from a Notre Dame perspective, and I agree that I think USC is their biggest rival.
Oh,
but,
of course.
But Michigan and what is considered rivalry games for Notre Dame was like number 7 on the list of the number of times they've played each other and all that. So it's a cool game, but at first I was kind of like, wow, it's a shame to see this go. But after seeing the reality of it, I'm like, eh, whatever. But, yeah, Notre Dame, Michigan's not going to be good this year. And they're still making that poor quarterback wear number 98. I just can't.
It's so stupid.
It really is.
Like, I understand honoring your old players, but you could just retire the number.
Or let him wear it for one game just to make your point and then move along.
Right. Oh, stupid. Wisconsin with a big win over Western Illinois. Good job. Nebraska with a kind of close win over McNeese State.
Yeah.
You know McNeese?
They scored a touchdown with, I think it was like less than a minute left to win that game. Nebraska did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kansas State beats Iowa State. Iowa State 0-2. Oh, but I don't think we mentioned it last week. Iowa State, they lost to North Dakota State of the FCS last week.
Yeah, but isn't North Dakota State like the defending national champion?
National champs, but it's still FCS.
Yeah.
You lose to them.
Well, Iowa State, they were in this game for a while with Kansas State. They were leading. I was actually watching this, believe it or not. And,
Kansas State is ranked, but again, they're one of those teams that it's the problem with the preseason rankings. You get a number next to your name, and it's, oh, well, this is almost an upset. Well, maybe you're just not actually that good.
I don't know. You know, though, with the Big 12 being what it is this year, they might be able to slip in and win it. I don't know.
South Carolina we talked about it last week, that East Carolina, not an easy team.
No.
South Carolina only wins 33-23. North Carolina, and this was a game – I was down in San Diego over the weekend, so this game was on all the TVs. San Diego State almost pulled off the road upset at North Carolina.
Yeah.
They threw an interception in the end zone in the final, like, I think with 14 seconds left. they were driving. They were going to score a touchdown and win this game, but they just threw it to the wrong guy. And North Carolina holds on with a 31-27 win. Clemson with a blowout. Missouri with a decent win over your Rockets, Greg. Five touchdowns by the quarterback Mock. No, you didn't go out to Toledo for this one?
Nah.
Nah.
If I thought they had a chance in hell of winning, I might have thought about it, but eh.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be ugly. But the Rockets, they put, I think, 24 points up, so I was happy with that.
Yeah.
And they've got new jerseys this year, which are still not good, but a significant improvement over what they used to wear, but they've got to ditch the blue pants. They'll look all right.
Are their numbers still huge?
No. No.
Okay.
They're still ugly, but they're not huge anymore.
Yeah. The other game I want to bring out that's not of the ranked teams. We talked about Texas in the preseason. And we said that, you know, maybe they could get themselves together. Maybe they can make a run there in the Big 12. And they win their opening game last week. But do you remember what game that we all turned on Texas was last year?
BYU.
BYU. They went into BYU. They went up to Utah. And they got their doors blown off, right?
Yep.
And so we said, you know, they changed the coach. So this is a game that it's in Austin. It's their home opener. It's not their home opener. It's their second home game. But this is a game that Texas should be ready to go and to reestablish themselves. And BYU goes down into Austin and blows their doors off again.
Beat them worse this time than it did last year in Utah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
41-7 BYU yep. beats Texas.
Yep.
And this was a game I actually got to watch a good chunk of. BYU, they tore them to pieces. Texas yeah. awful. Just awful.
I didn't get to see any of it, but I saw the score and I was like, good Lord, this is worse than it was last year when BYU just ran circles around them. Mm-hmm. It's just, I thought if there was a team in the Big 12 outside of Oklahoma that might have a shot, it would be Texas, but I'm not so sure now.
I hate the way that ESPN does this because I always skip games. Because, you know, when you list as a team as your favorite team, they put them at the top.
Yeah.
Scores. So, anyway, we'll go back for a second. As Arizona State had a weird game against New Mexico. They went up big early. Then New Mexico made a run to get it close. And then ASU went on a run to end the game to end up winning in a blowout 58-23. Sun Devils are 2-0. And then probably the most surprising game. Not maybe the most surprising, but I think this was a game we thought would probably go the other way. USC goes up to Stanford, and they beat them 13-10 on a late field goal. Number 14 USC over number 13 Stanford. We had big hopes for Stanford.
If you remember, I said I liked USC to win that conference this year.
Did you?
Yeah, I sure did. Yeah.
Well, then they're backing your pickup, but a weird game with a kind of weird incident as a. Pat Hayden goes down to the sidelines and starts arguing with one of the referees after Hayes Pulliard, one of the linebackers there for SC, gets ejected. And apparently, like, supposedly someone texted Pat Hayden to go down to the field. That's what Pat Hayden says. I'm not sure. But it was a weird kind of incident in what's a huge win for SC that vaults them into number 9. In the rankings, and Stanford a blow to their Pac-12 championship hopes.
Well, I know that Hayden got fined by the Pac-12. I don't think that, because the big argument about him going onto the field was he's part of the playoff committee.
Yeah,
and he was
right.
down there pleading his case for his team, and that doesn't look good. But apparently, the NCAA or whoever's behind all that didn't have an issue with it. But the Pac-12 did fine him, I think, $25,000 for doing that. So. I don't know. It was not the smartest move. He admitted it wasn't the smartest move, but I can't say I blame him. I mean, you know, playoff committee or not, USC's his team.
Yep. And with that, Stanford also snapped the longest home winning streak in the country at 17. And do you know who was second, Greg?
In what? The longest winning streak?
Longest active home winning streak.
Probably the Buckeyes.
It was the Buckeyes, but they got knocked off. So do you know who currently has the longest active home winning streak right now in college football?
Let me run a guess here. I'm going to say Oklahoma.
Nope. Think what? Mountain West.
Boise State?
No,
can't be them.
Fresno State. 13,
Fresno State, no kidding.
13 consecutive home victories for the Bulldogs.
All right.
Number 2 is Northern Illinois and with 12, and then Baylor has 11 in a row at home.
Northern Illinois. Thanks for nothing, Tommy Lee Lewis.
But, yeah, that is the scores from last week. The rankings as they currently are, Florida State number 1, Oregon jumps up to 2, Alabama moves down to 3, Oklahoma 4, Auburn 5, Georgia with a first-place vote is at 6, Texas A&M with 2 first-place votes is at 7.
Who keeps giving Georgia that vote?
I don't know,
it's
man.
It's like the third week in a row they've gotten one
first-place
vote. The
Atlanta Journal-Constitution, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Baylor 8, USC up to 9, LSU 10, Notre Dame at 11.
I don't know about that.
UCLA at 12.
Hey, you know what? You just got to get number 4. Auburn's one away, you know.
No, but it's not based on the rankings.
Oh, it's not?
Don't look straightly at the rankings. No. So the way the playoff is going to work is it's the committee is not beholden to the rankings. They are beholden to pick in what their minds are the four best teams in college football.
That's not going to cause any problems at all.
None whatsoever.
And that's now that the games are going, that's something that people have started to bring into discussion.
Yeah.
Because – and the other – and another thing that's going to make – when because I think it's after week four they're going to start releasing – the committee's going to meet every weekend, every Sunday, and they're going to meet and discuss, and they're going to put out their list of teams, how they would rank the teams. So the thing that's interesting about that is, you know, they're going to rank these teams, but you could get a situation where teams are going to kind of fluctuate up and down that list for no reason whatsoever.
Mm.
And so people are going to be like, people are going to the rankings are a good thing for people like us that want to talk about these things, and for fans, because with college football we're trained to know, well, numbers. This team is ranked this, so this means something. These are two ranked teams that are supposed to play. But if you start getting these kind of arbitrary rankings where things kind of fluctuate, you might be in a position where the committee is going to get hammered week to week because of how things kind of fluctuate.
I think that we thought that there was a lot of bitching back when it was just the BCS and just number one and number two. You've added a whole lot of new people to the mix this time around, but it's still better than what we had before, I think.
Like if you were going to do that sort of thing right now, you look at Oregon State or Oregon. They have those huge wins, so they're obviously in it. Florida State, they're the defending national champs. They have two big wins, so they're probably in right now, right? Alabama has an okay win over West Virginia and then a blowout over Florida Atlantic, whereas Texas A&M has a big win at South Carolina and then a 70-3 blowout at home. So you might say, hey, maybe Texas A&M looks better than Alabama right now, even though Texas A&M ranked number 7, Alabama number 3. If they were to just randomly pick these teams,
well, you know, well, what's going
to
happen?
Throw A&M over Alabama or Auburn or something like
that. I just need to know, who do I need to bribe?
Well, see, that's the problem.
The conference championship games will clear up a lot of this as we get towards the end of the season.
Right, of course.
But it's going to be, especially, I don't know that I kind of question the wisdom of releasing the rankings every week?
Every week?
I don't know if that's the smartest move.
All these people, all the athletic directors and everybody else that's on the committee, they're actually going to fly to Dallas every Sunday to meet and do this and then fly back to their respective jobs.
See, if I were on that committee, I'd just be like, guys, can you just like hook me up on Skype or something?
We're doing a show from Ohio, Ontario, Canada, and California on Skype. Yeah. These guys can't pull that off? Come on.
Apparently not. But so that's going to be interesting. But the thing that to consider when you get to those conference championship, Greg, the thing that may throw a loop into this is what happens if – now, they probably won't do this just because of the controversy. But say it's Alabama and they're running away with the West, the SEC West. They're to everyone else, they look like one of the a pretty good team or one of the best teams in the country. Mm-hmm. And then the SEC East is kind of a weaker division, and maybe they trip up in that championship game and they lose. Do you still pick Alabama to go to the playoff?
Run it by me again now?
Alabama's running it like, right. Looks like one of the best teams in the country.
Okay.
And they lose to Missouri in the SEC championship.
And
like, you still think Alabama's the second best team in the country?
If they lose?
Saw all season.
Yeah, if they lose.
If they lose the conference championship game. Like if they end up being like 12-1, and they lose in the conference championship game, do you still pick them to go to the playoff?
I don't know. See, that's the thing. It's going to be. Well, we talked about this before. I don't know that unless it's just they're so clearly better than the other two teams that would be behind them. I don't know that you're going to be seeing a conference championship loser make the playoff unless, like, okay, let's say that. God, I don't know, man. Anything's possible.
Like, say with Florida State, because Florida State is right now undeniably they're the number one team in the country. Everyone's going to pick them as such until they lose.
Right.
Say they lose, they go undefeated and they lose in the ACC title game.
So, you know what? Like if they lose in the ACC title game, screw them. They can play in the Crab Legs Bowl.
That's what we talked about before. I don't know. I mean, you know, you've almost got to think you've got to lean towards conference championships, but –
But if their job is to just simply pick
the four best teams,
think are the four best teams,
right? Because
it's ranked 1 through 4,
right?
Not the four undefeated teams. Who are the four best teams?
And,
not
the four best champions of the five big conferences.
Okay, here's my question though: if the rankings aren't going to determine the playoffs, then what's the point of having them? Well, what is the point of ranking them at all?
Because people like it.
Yeah, and you got to remember too, Mike, that the rankings, like one's an AP poll, the other one's the USA Today Top 25. They're not. I don't believe they're NCAA official or anything.
The rankings that everyone is abiding by right now is the AP Top 25.
Right.
And that's what everyone used to do until the BCS came out. And then with the BCS, the USA Today Coaches Poll was part of the BCS formula. So that ended up being the official one. So until otherwise noted, all the numbers are from the AP. And for the most part, it's the same in the USA Today. Oregon's the number 4 in the USA Today, whereas Alabama and Oklahoma are 2 and 3. But then Auburn, Georgia, Baylor is ahead of Texas A&M, LSU, USC's at 10. So it's they're all kind of in the same place.
But back to your question, here's the thing. Okay, bringing up Alabama again, it's going to be tough. Let's say the Big Ten champion wins they win the conference. Say it's Michigan State and they're 9-3, and Bama's 12-1. You really can't put Michigan State in over them, can you?
Right. That's the question.
Huh.
That's why this thing could either go really well and you could have 4 undefeated teams.
Or it could be a disaster.
Or you could have 2 undefeateds and 2 one-loss conference champions. Or you could have chaos. And
right.
the problem is with when there was chaos in the BCS, we loved it because then they would just put the numbers into a computer.
Then we could just surrender our will to the machine.
Right. And whatever the computer spat out, well, that's the game. You can't dismiss it.
You know, Skynet said it, so,
right. You know. So now you're going to have human beings who we know are fallible.
Right.
And so if somebody picks, like, if you get to a point where the other question I heard on a college football podcast was, do you think that the committee, based on who they are, who's on the committee, that they might give preference to a traditional power like an Alabama, USC, LSU, somebody like that, over, you know, Texas A&M or Baylor? Because
right.
Baylor, not known as a college football power, only in recent years where they've been, you know, producing these quarterbacks that just throw for 5,000 yards a game.
Right.
If, you know, do you pick – you're supposed to pick the best team, but are they going to be biased in one way or another because of reasons? And
it's
going to be interesting.
Yeah, it really is, because it could – I don't know. I mean, you know, this is something that I don't think anybody thought about going into this, that this could be a real issue.
Yeah.
Because let's say that you know, using Baylor as an example, let's say they're 12-1. And Bama's 12-1, but Baylor won the Big 12, and Bama came in second in the SEC. Then what?
Right. If Baylor's 12-1, and there's no championship game in the Big 12.
Okay, excuse me. Okay, 11-1. Then let's say.
Right. So Baylor's 11-1. Alabama is 12-1, but they lost in the conference championship game. Do you pick Alabama over Baylor?
I pick Baylor, but that's just me.
Right.
But again, can I make the argument that I really in my heart believe that Baylor's better than Alabama? I don't know.
Right. That's the question. Hmm. Do you think Baylor is better than Alabama?
Wow. Well, it's going to be fun.
You know what? They should have just stuck with the stupid computer.
Yeah. But what they should have done is just stuck with the BCS computer and put a playoff system in place. It's just top four, playoff, done.
Right.
You know, and then you can complain about the computer numbers, but that's what it is. What the issue is that they decided to implement the committee, like they do with because they were trying to be like, well, the NCAA basketball championship uses a committee. That's different.
Yeah, you're talking like 80 teams.
68 teams.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And there's a lot of automatic qualifiers and things of that nature. So maybe when we get to 8 teams, which I none of us have any doubt that they're going to go to 8. Probably in like 3 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they get to 8, and then you say, well, okay, the Power 5 conference champions are automatic. And then you get 3 at-larges, and then maybe it's kind of okay.
Yeah.
But until then, You know, if something like these scenarios we're throwing out happen, then it's chaos. But we'll have to wait till the end of the season to see how it all plays out.
But, I agree, but this is another good example of why an 18 playoff's probably the better idea.
Yes. I like Greg's idea for a playoff, actually.
Isn't it perfect?
It's perfect.
It's absolutely perfect. It's the only smart idea I've ever had in my whole life, and I'm going to stand by it, damn it.
Looking towards next week, not a whole lot of intrigue on the college schedule.
I was going to say, this is probably the week where it's just going to be cupcakes and all that, right?
Yeah. Thursday, Houston goes to newly number 25 BYU. Meh. Baylor goes on the road to the University of Buffalo on Friday night. So maybe it's cold and Baylor only scores 45 points.
Uh-huh. It's not that cold in Buffalo this time of year.
Let's see. USC goes to Boston College. Maybe an interesting game. But Wyoming, Oregon, Southern Miss, Alabama. Probably the only interesting game is you got number 6 Georgia. They travel to number 24 South Carolina.
That could be interesting.
Now, the last time, obviously, the there was a ranked game in South Carolina. That was the opening game of the season, and Texas blew the doors off South Carolina. Texas A&M blew the doors off South Carolina. And I believe Georgia beat South Carolina last year in Georgia.
I don't remember, but
I think so.
It sounds right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out because, again, big SEC East implications in that game. But Texas A&M hosts Rice. Purdue goes to Notre Dame, and Notre Dame's going to be wearing those alternate uniforms. The Navy ones with the ND on the helmet.
No.
UCLA goes to the Jerry Dome to play the Longhorns. If UCLA loses that game, I won't be surprised.
I wouldn't either, really.
No, and they have the little score, the favorite line here. How many points do you think UCLA's favored by?
In that game?
Yeah.
I'm gonna
the Longhorns in Dallas.
I'm going to say less than 7.
8.
8. I was close.
8 points.
Yeah. I don't think that that's
the number 12 team in the country.
I don't think – well, I think that –
National championship possibilities.
No, because I'll tell you what. Gamblers are smarter than pollsters are. Or the people that do the polls.
Yes. I'm looking through. No, nothing. Nothing. Yeah. I mean, Kent State plays Ohio State. Louisville's on the road at Virginia. That might be an interesting game because I thought Virginia looked pretty good in week one against UCLA at home. And
yeah.
They won their next game last week. So, interesting to see. But that's it.
Only
3... five road team or ranked teams on the road. USC at BC, Arizona State's at Colorado, but that's not a big deal. Georgia's at South Carolina, and then Louisville's on the road at Virginia, but kind of a lackluster week.
Well, that's what happens when we get to this time of the year in college football. Hopefully when they implement the 8-game playoff, we won't see as much of this.
Yeah.
But
well,
until
I guess
then,
the other interesting one is Tennessee is at Oklahoma next week.
Nah, that's not that interesting.
Speaking of Tennessee, did you see the leak of their alternate uniform?
No.
No.
Oh boy. Let me pull this up for you.
Is this going to be something that I'm not really surprised of? Because
are we surprised by anything in college football uniforms anymore?
Sometimes something manages to be even worse than I thought. Like when the Hokies unveiled those stupid, like, stonemason helmets. I was like, no.
How far are we from the uniform that makes it look like the players aren't wearing any clothes?
So, I have a question. Okay. I have a question for you about the University of Tennessee.
Okay.
What do you think could be the worst possible things you would see on a University of Tennessee uniform?
Checkerboards,
yeah. I go with that.
Because there is the checkerboard end zone, so you don't like checkerboards.
Well, I think Smokey, although I love him as a mascot, I don't think he has any business on the uniform, so I'm going to go with Smokey.
I like the checkered end zones, but I don't think it would make a good uniform.
Do you remember the jerseys they wore last year? Do you remember what color their alternates were last year?
Weren't they
gray?
Gray or something?
Right. So what would you say if you saw a gray jersey with gray and orange checkerboards on the sleeves and checkerboard orange numbers.
I would say sounds about right.
That sounds hideous, and it sounds stupid. It just sounds hideous.
Sounds like that.
Oh.
Wow. Wow, that's giving Maryland a run for its money, guys.
Oh, no.
Ooh, the poor Vols. They used to be good, and they had great uniforms, and now look at them. They're terrible, and they got to wear that.
I think Greg's right. This is all a practical joke by Nike, and Nike's laughing. Like, look what we made Adidas do to Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. It's the greatest practical joke of all time. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting uniform unveiling that happened this last week. This weekend is going to be the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Baltimore. What was the Battle of Baltimore?
Beats the hell out of me.
It was the battle that inspired the poem that became the Star-Spangled Banner.
Oh, big deal.
So Maryland took it upon themselves to be super patriotic. And,
of course they did.
They are going to be wearing a special uniform to commemorate the 200th anniversary of the poem of the Star-Spangled Banner.
They're actually putting the lyrics?
Yes. The lyrics on the poem and the song are on the shoulders and on the helmet. And there's a special decal that is a symbol of the fort on their helmet with the American flag inside of it. And the uniform is red, navy blue, and parchment yellow.
You know, you guys are going to hate me for this, but I don't think this – now, granted, it's stupid, but I don't think it's that terrible.
It wouldn't be so bad.
Take the text out of there, and I think it's not a bad look.
Yeah, but okay. the text, but it's still there.
Take the word Maryland off of it, and what uniform is that for?
Army.
Yeah.
United States Navy.
Yeah.
I'd say Army just because
of the World Cups football team.
I'd say Army just because the helmet. Like I could tell that that's a fort in the helmet logo, so I'd say maybe it's like Army trying to do like a fort based thing.
I gotta be honest, I kind of like it.
That script, like, get rid of the script and put like maybe the Maryland M on the sleeves, and you got something. But
the script is a bad idea. But other than that, I don't think it's so bad.
So will each uniform have a different portion of the song on the sleeves?
Oh God, no, that'd be great. That would be awesome.
Every single player should have had a different lyric on their back.
So you'd be like, number 22, Osei, starting at strong safety. At quarterback, number 5.
Dawn's early light.
Dawn's early light. No, just yeah, dawn's course, early. Just
notice
dawn's
on
early.
These sides of the pants, if you scroll down, there is the words, conquer we must.
Okay, well, now they're losing me.
Conquer we must. Okay, yeah. Okay. One, that line does not actually appear in the Star-Spangled Banner. And two, like... Again, it's kind of perpetuating the football is war thing.
Yeah, a little bit.
And it's like, conquer we must? Okay, not only is that not in the song you're referencing, but two, you're a football team. Well, you're Maryland, so you're not even very good. So you're not even going to win. So, you know, you're not even conquering metaphorically. And two, even if you were a good team, winning a football game is not the same as conquering.
Yeah, well, they're also playing West Virginia, so it's very possible they could lose.
Well, you guys are totally killing my buzz on this uniform now. But.
You take off the script.
Right.
Change the get rid of the Maryland word mark.
Right.
And Zach's right. You got a good, like, American football USA World Cup uniform.
And the conquer we must has got to go, too, but yeah.
And the conquer we must is – oh, God. If you scroll down to the last picture on this page, it shows the shoes that they're wearing.
Yeah.
The lyrics to the Star-Spangled Banner are on the soles of the shoes. That just strikes me as disrespectful at that point. You're like stepping on the lyrics to your national anthem. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
College football uniforms still where we left them.
Yeah.
It's a dumpster fire. It is a never-ending dumpster fire.
Greatest practical joke of all time, I'm telling you.
Also, in uniform oddities, this weekend is the one game where LSU has to wear the purple jerseys.
Cool. I like to see that once in a while.
But that's all the football and college football uniforms I could take for this week. Greg, Mike, and myself will be back on Thursday to record basically a sports show, the flagship of the Basically a Sports Empire.
And we're going to be rocking it old school. Andy's coming back for the week.
Rocking it old school. We're getting the whole gang back together.
Yeah.
Right around our two-year anniversary.
One of his four contractually obligated appearances per year, yes.
Yes. Yep.
And tomorrow I record episode 31 of Basically a Geek Show.
So. God, I can't believe it's been 31 already.
I can't either.
Wow.
I can't either for me to like bitch about Transformers for 31 weeks.
it's amazing how fast we all grow up.
Yeah.
You can follow us everywhere. We'll talk to you next week after another weekend of football. Hopefully only football. We'll catch you all later. Any last words?
Thanks for having me on this week, guys. It was a blast.
Our pleasure. Go Rockets.
Go Devils. Go Colts. We'll talk to you next week. More football on Basically a Football Show. Talk to you later.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Basically a Football Show. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spreaker, as well as on our website, basicallyasportsshow.com. Follow us on Twitter at BA Football Show. Follow Basically a Sports Show on Twitter at Basically Sports. And follow Basically a Geek Show at A Geek Show. Once again, thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time right here on Basically a Football Show.